Well, good afternoon. I am John Lott from the Knox County Health Department, and this is Jeremy Corbett. Today, what we want to talk about is our partnership as we looked at sustaining a school-located vaccination program. And basically, what I want to say is that as we looked at our partnership, we felt like this is a sustainable model. So let me paint the picture for you as we move forward. Over the past 6 years, I've led the school influenza program at the Knox County Health Department. We initially started with basically a desire to increase our vaccination rates for the schools and to keep kids in schools. We were approached in 2005 by MedImmune and offered an opportunity to have some free flu mist and to do some school-located clinics. We took them up on that opportunity, and that year we vaccinated about 45% of the kids in the public schools. As we moved forward into the next year, we worked with MedImmune and got a grant from them, and we expanded the program to include not only the public schools but also the private schools. That year we vaccinated probably around 47%. Over the next few years, we added both private Head Starts and daycares to the mix. As we added more schools, we looked at how can we develop the model and keep it going, because it's a tremendous burden on the health department, both financially as well as operationally. So over the past few years, I've been looking for a partner to help us move this forward and sustain it. This year, we partnered with VaxCare, and both Jeremy and I, as we sat down and looked at this year, we viewed it as a transitional year for us. We wanted to figure out what are those hidden things that were going to pop up that would, we need to know about so that as we move forward, we can address them. We both had our expertise, VaxCare being a private immunization company that goes around and conducts immunization clinics with various groups. For us, we've been doing the program for over 5 years in the school-based system, and we felt like we both had some very good ideas to bring to the table. So today what we'll do is we will talk about this year's transitional year, how the vaccination program went, and where we think we want to go in the future. So as we look at how do we evaluate our program, we looked at four main objectives. First, did the partnership save money? Was the partnership more efficient? Were vaccination rates comparable? And is this the future? And I'm going to let Jeremy talk about some of those things now, and then we'll transition into making sure that we present the program well.
Thank you, John. Well, thank you all for showing up here. This really was just a partnership. John had a five-year-old child, if you will, this program that is well-known, well-respected across the country, and he let us babysit it for a year. And my wife doesn't let me have my three-year-old by myself. She doesn't trust me. So I understand the trust in giving us this five-year-old program and allowing us to run with it. And it really was a problem that they had. They could not sustain this, not just financially, but operationally. And what VaxCare brought to the table, and of course I work for VaxCare, what we brought to the table was an ability to partner together to continue immunization rates as before, but really what John's last point was is what this whole program and what this presentation is about. Can we prove sustainability? Can we offer people like you guys in the audience an opportunity to run school programs without having to put all the resources, all the time, and all the energy into it? You can keep doing it the way you're doing it and keep doing what's happening. We can see the rates drop, but you can get back into the schools like they did in New York City. We can get in the schools like we have in Knox County or in Florida or in Georgia and Alabama. And we can go forward, and we're just trying to say, hey, listen, is this the way forward? First question we wanted to answer, is it cost-effective? Can we save money? This is just purely looking at the cost per vaccine. We average the cost charged to Knox County, the price roughly that we get as a large user of vaccine. And we said, you know what, even if we didn't do any billing, we would save money just by running vaccine costs through a party like ours. This slide, though, I think is really what kind of the proof is in the pudding. Megan did a great job presenting New York City, and presenting Knox County compared to New York City's like, you know, Hong Kong to Breathitt County, Kentucky. The costs are obviously different, okay? And we understand that. But when you look at a party or an entity like ours, we can do this cheaply. This is all we do 365 days out of the year is run a school program. What John is doing efficiently and wonderfully day in, day out is taking care of patients in Knox County. Oh, and during the year, then he's got this monstrous school program to run. So John and them, they averaged their numbers over the last 5 years, and I would argue that any county health department in the entire country that tries to put their cost per administration up against Knox County's will find that it can't do it as cheaply. John and them ran a very nice, efficient program. But in year one, the transition year, we can come in with our nurses, our staff, our vaccine, our promotion, our portals, our web access for parents, our consent forms, and can do it at a $7 per administration cost. We heard the numbers of Megan. That was a very nice lead-in that Megan gave us. We're talking about $70, $100 per administration. And we can come in year one and say, you know what, Knox County, we can run this program, and we can do it for about $7 per administration. We wanted to look at efficiency. You know, if we could save money for John and for Dr. Buchanan and their team, that's one thing. But can we do it efficiently? If it costs us less money per shot, but it takes us all day to do it, we're not doing anybody any good. We looked at the total average hours of clinics 2005 to 2009 and found about 269 hours given for the pure immunization standpoint or immunization status of the clinics. This is not the lead-in time, the promotion time, the reconciliation time. In our year, 2010, we took about 305 hours to do the same immunizations. The reason that is we did far more shots. So you realize 2005, immunizations are going. This was a flu mist program. 2006, flu mist program. 2007. What happened in 2009? All of a sudden, we had this 2009 H1N1 introduced, and second dose naive kids became a big concern. And so in 2010, we ran a lot of second dose clinics for those flu-naive kids, which did drive the numbers up a little bit. And we see on the next slide actually drove the number of immunizations per clinic down. The average number of hours per clinic was the same, about 2 hours per clinic. I'll give you a second just to kind of look at those numbers. This is just a snapshot. Looking at efficiency, roughly 30,000 doses given before VaxCare and after VaxCare. Number of vaccinations per clinic, like we just talked about, did go down a little bit because during the second dose clinics, when flu mist was being given, or TIV, as we introduced TIV this year, the kids that actually got shots or got flu mist during those doses, during those clinics, were far fewer. So if you had a clinic of 1,000 kids, only maybe 30% of those might be flu naive. So that second clinic might only have 300 potential kids to get immunized, not 1,000 kids. If you look at the average vaccination rate, relatively, before 2010, TIV had been discussed, but had not been given for a variety of reasons, and we can take questions on that at the end of the session. John and I felt very strongly this year that to run a program, it needed to be a purely and truly inclusive program. No child turned away for whatever reason, ability to pay or inability to get flu mist. So we introduced TIV this year. Our nurses had to give injections and flu mist side by side. And you think that'd be a huge hurdle or a huge burden? No issue whatsoever. In fact, if you look at the bottom right corner, our nurses actually gave 46 immunizations per nurse hour using TIV and flu mist together. They actually gave more immunizations when TIV was on the table next to flu mist compared to flu mist alone. A large portion of the reason that was is that this year we decided to introduce TIV only in middle schools. Middle schools move through much quicker than an elementary school would or a daycare or Head Start.
As we look at the vaccination rates, what you see before you is basically a breakdown by school type. You'll notice that in the first 5 years of the program, there's a public school rate. Well, what we found out is during the first four years of the program, the vaccination rate in the public high schools was fairly low. In the fifth and sixth year of the program, or 2009 and 2010, we decided that we would not go back into the public high schools to vaccinate them. Again, this is a resource issue, and we'll discuss that a little bit more later. But as you look down the numbers, what you see is a very comparable vaccination rate when you look at the previous 5 years averaged versus this current partnership year. At the bottom of the chart, what you'll notice is that with the public high schools included, our average vaccination rate was around 46% overall. If you remove the high schools and try to do an apples-to-apples comparison, you'll notice that the rates are still very comparable. Again, what we need to remember is that influenza varies by season. Last year with the H1N1, and of course this year, there were differences in vaccinations as we saw across the country. This chart here shows you the true numbers vaccinated by school type. Again, if you took out the high school numbers, you'd look at a very comparable first dose vaccination. What really stands out, though, is if you look at the second dose vaccinations. While normally over the past 5 years we vaccinate around 1,700 kids, this year the number grew to 6,000. Now, really, again, that goes back to the inclusion of H1N1 and the definition of a vaccine-naive child. What really strikes me, though, is that while I felt like we did a great job at second dose rates, because our second dose rate averaged out over the years is around 60%, this year VaxCare did a second dose rate of 90%. That's just tremendous when you stop and think about it. So what you see is really the comparable numbers. This chart depicts the socioeconomic level and the vaccination rates. Now, we only have included the public schools in this chart because we cannot get socioeconomic data on our private schools, our Head Starts, our daycares, and we had done this over the previous year, so we tried to keep it consistent. I believe, though, the take-home from this chart that you see is that the least disadvantaged children are your highest vaccinated group. Now, over time, the Knox County Health Department has seen this, and we have actually conducted some targeted interventions with our most disadvantaged group. However, those interventions have led to just barely slight increases in the vaccination rate for that group. So clearly, this is a group we're going to continue to need to work on and try to raise that vaccination rate. Now, we've talked about what were the efficiencies of the program, what were some of the comparable vaccination rates, what were the costs. What I want to do now is talk to you about some of the future. And with that, the Knox County Health Department conducted a couple of surveys. The first survey was with the parents of public school children, and we had about 1,600 respondents in that survey. But I want to focus in on two questions specifically. Although overall they felt like the program was very successful and they really appreciated it, these two questions I believe target us towards moving in the future. We asked the parents, you know, based upon the fact that we want to continue this program, but looking at how do we do that, would you be willing to pay $20 to $30 for your child to receive a vaccination in the future? Clearly, two-thirds of them said no, they weren't willing to do that. Now, perhaps that's because over the past 6 years, it's been free. And so any idea of introducing a cost may be one of those prohibitive things for them. The next question that I want to highlight is we asked them, would you be willing for us to bill your medical insurance? And clearly, three-fourths of the population that responded said yes. Now, I think this is an important part because as we move forward and have discussions with the schools, we have to look at how do we capture data. And for this year, our transitional year, one of the issues that we had was how is getting complete and accurate data so that we can bill appropriately. And Jeremy's going to talk a little bit more about that. In this survey, we ask the public school principals, teachers, school nurses, and other faculty. Overall, and again, I want to focus on just a few questions, but overall, as you look at it, 711 out of 748, which is 95% of the school faculty, felt like it was very important to vaccinate against influenza. And again, if you look at it, 95% of them felt like that it was important to vaccinate the children in schools, and they appreciated that effort. So that's a very important piece as we have discussions with schools in the future. The other thing that I'd like to highlight is that we asked them what kind of impact it had on their school operations by conducting the program. And 85% of them felt like it had a minimal impact on their operations. again, as we move forward and have conversations with the schools, it's important that we communicate to them, we understand they're there to educate the kids, and we're there to try to vaccinate as many kids as possible so that we can keep them healthy and keep them in school. And one of the other points is most of their reimbursement is tied to an average daily attendance. So keeping kids healthy and keeping them in school is very important to them. It's also very important to us as we decrease the influenza rate in the community.
Thanks, John. So we've talked about the fact, I mean, if you go around, I talk to public health immunization directors all the time from a state level all the way down to a county level. There's a huge desire to do school-located clinics. Everybody thinks that's a good idea. We're not here to convince you of that. I think that's pretty common sentiment. The idea, though, is that everybody would do it if resources were unlimited, and they're not. Budgets are getting cut across the country. Everybody's trying to look for a solution. I think the CDC would be on board saying this is a good way forward. Let's get kids where they are in schools. But how do we do that? And as we looked at it, there were some real benefits. Without any billing brought to the table whatsoever, and we'll spend a slide talking about billing in a moment, we could save money on the cost per dose. And we actually dropped the staffing needs and the operational burden considerably. John's operational burden was decreased. His nurses were spending time seeing patients in the clinic without any disruption because my team was out doing the clinics. So Knox County got this incredible umbrella of public relations like they've had for the last 5 years without having to do any of the heavy lifting. And some people would say, well, gosh, I'd pay for that. Well, yeah, you can pay for that and do it, but not only did they have to pay for it, they did pay for it, but at a far less cost than they would have otherwise. But that's not a bridge to the future. We could come into anybody's public health department and say, hey, great, you know, give us some money and we'll go do a clinic. That's not how this is going to work. The idea is, and we just want to paint a quick picture, traditionally, if you look at numbers, roughly 60% of any population will have some type of insurance. Roughly 20% will have some type of public plan, Medicaid or something similar. And roughly 20% will have no ability to pay, under insurance or no insurance. Because this is all we do every year, we look at school programs, and they're actually a little different. The stratification is actually roughly a third, a third, and a third. And so when John and I actually bridged this gap and looked at the program, knowing this would be a transition year, the idea was to get to a point, and I think we're there for this next year, where a third of the children would be given vaccinations with private stock out of our supply, billed to their private insurance company with no cost to the system, no cost to public health. Another third, exact same solution. We get VFC doses. We can actually bill Medicaid, no cost to the system. And you go looking from maybe 20 or 1,000 or 100,000 immunizations in your county, in your state, et cetera, where you've got to cover the cost of every one of those immunizations. And just pick a number. Pick John's number of $11 per administration, or pick $75, or pick the Hawaii study of $27. It's insurmountable. You can't do it. It's just too expensive. But if you look at a program going forward, where the only thing you have to cover is the cost of maybe that a third of the children who don't have any ability to pay, the cost really for a 10,000-shot school program isn't several hundred thousand dollars. It's a third of 10,000 shots, maybe 3,000 kids, times $7. For $20,000 now, you're running a program where 20,000, or 10,000 rather, immunizations are given. That's doable. That's sustainable. And what John and I would like to see is where there's enough money coming in from the private stock pay, from the third-party payers, to potentially become a costless program. Why not? If third-party payers are willing to pay, why can't this program be self-sustaining without any input of taxpayer dollars? And that's where we're bridging the gap. That's where we're moving. And this year was a transition period. We absolutely had some accurate and completeness issues with patients filling out consent forms. But what we found this year is we know where to go. We know how to get the data this next year. And as the parents have already said, hey, listen, if you bill my insurance company, we'll be more than happy to take care of this. We love you guys doing these programs in schools. Well, great. Now we've got a partner that can do the billing effectively, that can bring the technology to the table. This year we introduced a KnoxFluProgram.com. It gave parents an opportunity to go online, download the consent form, look at the schedule, and next year actually do eligibility checks to determine if those children have the means to pay. Go ahead and know that those 60% or so are going to help fund those third who potentially may not have the opportunity to pay. So that safety net, when we mentioned that, that is really that third of the children who have no ability to pay, and having Knox County or another public entity say, you know what, to run this program, we're more than happy to cover that small cost for the small amount of children. There's a lot of ideas being thrown around from a legislative standpoint. In 2009, there was a lot of funds. A lot of entities, public, county, state, ran school programs. And this goes back to my earlier point. If there were unlimited resources, everybody could run a program, but there's not. And so as we look at budget considerations, et cetera, partnering seems like the way forward. And that's what John and I are excited to kind of present, is that, listen, bring public and bring private best practices together for the good of immunizing a community in the schools. There's really very little bad about doing something like that. Another point to consider is additional vaccines. To use a comment somebody in this room actually mentioned to me, we don't want this to be an influenza silo. There's a lot of teenage vaccinations, required school vaccinations. There's no reason why influenza is the only vaccine being given in schools. Why are we giving Tdap and Menactor and all kinds of immunizations to children and to employees as well? If we've got a clinic on site and we're there, why aren't we pushing through that portal more immunizations for these children?
Okay. You know, in moving forward, of course, everybody's asking, okay, how do we develop our program and what are some of the considerations? Well, as the Knox County Health Department moved forward in developing its program, it was both inclusive and exclusive. And what I mean by that is, you know, you have to decide who to vaccinate, where to vaccinate them, and how do you cover those kids that don't have insurance or don't have the ability to pay. And so for the Knox County Health Department, we initially only had flu mist, which, you know, if you look at it, it eliminates about 15% of the kids based on medical ineligibility. Then if you look at where do we vaccinate, well, after a few years, we developed the idea that we probably need to stop vaccinating the public high schools because of the low vaccination rate, and again, because of limited resources. So it's one of those things that you have to consider is, yes, there may be some exclusions. However, you know, if you partner with a group, can you eliminate those exclusions? And again, Jeremy's already talked about the safety net, but for this year, we viewed this as our transition year, and we wanted it to be as inclusive as possible. And so the Knox County Health Department picked up the cost of vaccination for the kids who couldn't pay or that we couldn't bill. And looking at financing for the future, we've been very blessed in that we've been able to use a mix of VFC, 317, and local provided vaccine. In addition, we've had a combination of grants and local funding as well as some other initiatives. In looking at the future, one of the things we feel like we need to do is go talk to the schools, because at the end of the year, the schools have a budget that has some leftover money. We feel like that if we can talk to them to move that money into a targeted line item, then we would be able to have some money from them to help pay for the program. Okay. In summary, really what we want to bring out is the fact that as we evaluated this year's program, was this the foundation? We looked at several things. Did the partnership save money? Was the partnership efficient? Were the rates comparable? And yes to all those questions. The question of, is this a foundation to move forward in the future with a public-private partnership? I'd say yes to that also. However, as Jeremy's talked about, we have identified some issues that we need to address. But, again, this was our transition year to identify those issues, which we feel like we have. We feel like we've got a workable solution to the future. And so we feel like that foundation's been laid. So this is a way to transition to the future. With that, I will wrap it up, and we'll save questions for the end because I'm getting the hook.
Play the music here in a second.